I'm very happy now to welcome Irma Mayorga. She is a playwright. Her new play is called Cascarones, which is going to be produced starting tonight and running for 2 weekends at Teatro Paraguas. And we are joined by Adam McKinney, who is co-director of DNA Works, which is co-producing this play along with Teatro Paraguas. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's so nice for you to invite us to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Now, this is a play set in San Antonio, Texas, where you're from, about 20 years ago, with visits from historical characters who, in some ways, form the memories of the people in the play or inform the memories. How did this play come into being in your mind?
I think I didn't set out to have a character who travels back in time or who has time more accurately, I think, visit her. I set out to write a play about a family. And playwriting is a very funny thing because you can't, I don't know a lot of playwrights who like plot it all out. It's very organic. And so when the family started unfolding, I was seeing these images of how they negotiated their present. And their present was always somehow veiled in the past historical circumstance. And one day, the writing process gave me an image of figures from the past. And so I just let these figures from the past kind of infiltrate the family. And all of a sudden, they came rushing into this family's house, and they kept beckoning the lead characters to go out where they were. And so overall, it's very organic, so there's no like plot points that I was working with. It was more running into an image of the Grand Canyon, running into an image of Coronado and the great explorer John Wesley Powell from the 19th century, and letting them sit with me for a while.
So John Wesley Powell and Coronado, very different people, very different times, representing in a way different parts of our history and ways of thinking about land and place.
They're very much tied to the idea we have as a nation of the West. And I always like to say one is tied to Latinos in the West, and one is tied to how we kind of finished our map of the West. So Coronado is this figure that completely signifies colonization, Spanish colonization. And he's so important, especially to New Mexico, to this area. And there is a way that, when Coronado comes, or when all the Spanish conquistadores come, they help retune what the Americas will become. They reconfigure it, that meeting, that great, one of the great meetings of human history is when Spanish colonizers come to the Americas. So there is a way that he really is very important to Latino history, but more broadly to the history of the entire, you know, the two hemispheres that we are on here. John Wesley Powell is, I love him because I stumbled upon him in thinking about the Grand Canyon. So Coronado has a relationship to the Grand Canyon, which I can talk about in a minute. But John Wesley Powell is the man who's kind of been forgotten, I think, by history. He mapped the Grand Canyon. He's the first person to map the Grand Canyon. Coronado had made a map, and he was so fervent in looking for gold that he made a map that said that when he came upon the Grand Canyon, that this is kind of an unpassable, uninhabitable, unvaluable, because there's no gold place. There's no gold in the place. And John Wesley, and that map stood for so long that people for hundreds of years didn't go and explore the Grand Canyon. So John Wesley Powell takes it upon himself. It's the last great place in the West that hasn't been visited by a cartographer. And he is the one who's like, I'm going to go inside. I'm going to map this place. I don't think it's destitute. I don't think that it's just nothing. He sees the magnificence of the Grand Canyon. And in that, he is really in the vein of 19th century science. He's doing exactly what the 19th century scientists do. They wanted to explore all the known world that they could. So he really is emblematic of his time. And in that, he goes on to be held very important positions in the U.S. government. I believe he starts the Department of Ethnology, which is related to anthropology. And he has great concern for the native people. So he wants to photograph them, document them, because he realizes even as he's making that map, that the West is, as we know it, disappearing. Things like Transcontinental Railroad and all those. So he really is a scientific mind, and he also has what I like to think of as a conscience. In the Civil War, he fought for the North. His father was an abolitionist. So he has very specific questions about what happens to Native people that he encounters there, opposite of Coronado. And I think the two together create this great contrast of how they went into the what we think of as the American West.
I was thinking as I was reading the play, because John Wesley Powell, to the extent that he's remembered, is, at least around here, remembered for a map that he made of the West in which the states would be bounded according to their watersheds,
yes,
as opposed to straight line boundaries. And when you think about maps, a lot of the time they represent what you value. And if there's maps that have gold on them, you value gold. And if there's maps that are bounded by water,
exactly,
you value water, survival, things like that.
And he had he didn't want the U.S. to put up states and make boundaries until he's such a naturalist. He is a geologist. He spent, since his youth, he would go out into the wild and label and document all the wildlife, all the flora and fauna around him. So his inclination is to be the scientist. And so he really is, in this very advanced guard way, trying to pay attention to the land, which I think we would be better for today if we had listened to John Wesley Powell.
Very much so, yeah.
And the U.S. government... There's also a rise in capitalism in the U.S. at this time. So all of those great names who wanted the land for different purposes, the resources, put a stop on his scientific kind of inquiry of ways to divide out states or divide out land. And they said, it's taking too long. So John Wesley Powell, I think they actually had him removed from government. They demoted him in some way. And he's like, no, we have to be very thoughtful about this. And that's very intriguing to me about him and about, like, kind of the formation of the U.S. is that there was someone way back then. It wasn't just rampant, you know, bankers and corporations that were forming at that time, the early seeds of that. There was another force fighting, which we don't think of today a lot. We think of just like, oh, they just wanted to settle the West. He wanted to really, really be thoughtful about it.
Right. Right, just as people looking back on our time might not remember that there was every different force at play.
Yes.
Now, the Grand Canyon operates in a lot of ways, including symbolically, and I think it's telling that one of the characters says, what is it? It's a big gap, nothing. That nature, whatever, something line about that nature stuff.
One of the characters that's the lead, there's several lead characters, it's an ensemble play. One of the young women cannot see, like Coronado, cannot see the beauty that is this kind of natural wonder. For her, it's just rocks and you know, barren, and it's not exciting. That character in particular finds Las Vegas exciting. And I didn't go in kind of writing as a playwright thinking, oh, I want to make this character say that. It is just, I think, more symbolic of the way that people think about these beautiful places that we often now take for granted. And that the other character, her cousin, counters that, you know, later in the play, since you've read it, that we are destroying it faster. It took time so long to make it, and we are now destroying it faster than time can keep up. And so I like that the two of them are kind of grappling with what is this that is land to us, what is its importance to us, how do we feel about it.
Now, the play is written in a kind of Spanglish. I love Spanglish. I think many people, especially around here, love Spanglish. And I wondered, I mean, you're a scholar, you teach at Dartmouth College, you're an artist and playwright. Has Spanglish been studied academically? Does it have its own, like,
yes,
rules
has.
And syntax and
yes,
certain
does.
Words that you always use in English and others that you always use in
yes,
Spanish and
does.
How you mix them?
One of the most complimentary things that the cast and actually a Santa Fe audience and other audiences who know Spanglish or who speak Spanish, and some people don't speak Spanglish because they consider it chopping up the language, but more and more people do speak Spanish and it is studied academically. But one of the nicest things that a cast member has said is that it finally sounds like people actually speak in my community. So there is, if I go to San Antonio, my hometown, I can hear how the play sounds on the street, in the mall, in restaurants, in my family. When I'm roaming around here in Santa Fe, I hear it all the time. And I think that for my purposes, I am trying to write a story that's pertinent to my Latino community. And I'm trying to write in the voice of how Latinos speak. And so there was a very set purpose to capture that voice and not to, what often happens is to put the whole thing in English and anglicize it. I'm trying to tell a very specific story, and that specific story has a very specific vernacular. And I'm trying to respect the rules of that vernacular, which is where the compliment comes from, because you can try to pepper English with Spanish words, and it's not how people manipulate the language or articulate themselves. There is, you have to know what the logic is, and scholars have studied it. There's codes. It's called formally code switching between Spanish and English. So there's a way that those formal codes, there's combinations that people have honed and sharpened. And so if you just throw in a Spanish word, like all of a sudden if you say gracias, we all know you're not a native Spanglish speaker, because it's a throw-in versus an integrated dovetailing of two languages that's creative, that is illustrative, that is articulate. And in fact, more and more Spanglish is being recognized as its own kind of distinct dialogue. And there's a way that Spanglish is spoken. Like, I can go to New York and there's specific idioms that are particular to New York and the New Yorican or Puerto Rican community there, or in Connecticut. And I can go to L.A., and there's a completely different Spanglish. There are broader national Spanglishes that everybody gets. Like, we all know what a particular kind of manipulation of words is. It goes across, but there are regional dialects of Spanglish. So I know that when there was a reading here of the play in February, one of the community audience participants said, "I finally heard myself on stage. That's how we
nice.
Talk.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Adam McKinney, you are co-director of DNA Works. Your other co-director, Daniel Banks, is director of this play. How did the two of you get involved in co-producing it?
Sure. As I understand it, Daniel and Irma met several years ago, and Daniel heard the play at the Eugene O'Neill Center. Daniel kept the script in his back pocket literally for 10 years. And it wasn't
until... That's a big pocket.
I think so. And it wasn't until we arrived here in Santa Fe 5 years ago and developed the community support to engage in this process of co-producing this amazing play, Cascarones, which we're really excited about. I think one piece that I want to go back to, Irma, is this piece about the importance of presenting and producing culturally specific projects. Mm-hmm. And to produce these works that are specific to this place and this region, mm-hmm. and that may inform our day-to-day interactions both with ourselves and people outside of our communities. At DNA Works, we believe that art is healing, and certainly that is the case with this piece. Watching the rehearsals this past week, it certainly has brought a sense of healing and love and ease for me. Also important to DNA Works is community engagement. So we are engaging with associate producers from different cultural contexts to support the work and to invite their communities. So a little shout out to Nicholas Ballas, Esteban Rael Galvez and Juan Rios, Diane Karp, Lisa and Les Samuel, and Roxanne Swensel.
So let's go back. We're talking about the play Cascarones, which is opening tonight at Teatro Paraguas. Let's go back to the title of the play. What does Cascarones mean?
Cascarones is plural for cascarón. And so cascarón is, I know that the tradition exists here in northern New Mexico. My cast members, who are all local actors, have assured me that this tradition is here in northern New Mexico. For San Antonio, where I'm from, it is a very large tradition. We have fiestas in the spring. I know you guys have fiesta right now. But ours is in the spring around Easter. So this idea of the cascarón becomes very important, because a cascarón is an egg. And you take a raw egg, you blow out the yolk, you blow out the white, you clean it, you dye that in a brilliant jewel tone color, very bright. You stuff it with confetti as much as you can get in there. You seal it, and then you go and find a loved one, sneaking up behind them, or a not-so-loved one, as I like to say, and you take this beautiful, brilliant colored egg, and you smash it on their head. And so that cascarón becomes a celebration. It becomes joy and energy. The confetti falls all over the person. People laugh or curse at you for smashing the cascarón on their head. I always like to say that in the spring, one of the things that has always haunted me since childhood is in the spring around Fiesta, our streets are strewn with confetti. You see the remnants of these broken eggs in their eggshells everywhere. What I like about that tradition is that it's both about fragility of the egg and the energy of the explosion. It's both. It's this act of love that also has this little burst of, it's not violence, but there is a force behind it.
Mischief.
Mischief. It's the whole thing of sneaking up on someone. It's the whole thing of making the cascarón. And so this idea of both the act of mischief, which is an act of love, and then the act of the color and the fragility of the eggs is this wonderful, I think, conundrum and these layers of meaning. I think the audience tonight will see how that metaphor then becomes sewn into the characters, and how the characters are also, we as humans are also forces of strength and beautiful, brilliant explosions, and also very fragile creatures.
So Cascarones by Irma Mayorga opens tonight, and it's Thursday through Saturday at 7 in the evening, and that's this weekend and next weekend, and also on Sundays at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which is very nice to have a matinee that's not smack in the middle of the afternoon. I think that's becoming a little more popular here in Santa Fe. And Teatro Paraguas is at 3205 Calle Marie in Santa Fe. If people want more information and tickets, they can call 866-394-6033. Now, is there going to be a Q&A or an opportunity to talk to the producers and directors and playwright and so on?
Absolutely. After the performances of Cascarones on September 4th, 5th, that's tonight and tomorrow, as well as next Thursday and Friday, the 11th and 12th, both Director Daniel Banks and myself will lead community dialogues about issues that are raised in this amazing piece, Cascarones.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you both very much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Irma Mayorga, playwright and professor of theater, assistant professor of theater at Dartmouth College. Adam McKinney, co-director of DNA Works. And we will see you at Teatro Paraguas, which, by the way, is on the web at teatroparaguas.org. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.